Kia ora and welcome back to System Fix, a podcast from the health media. My name is Barbara Fountain and I am editor of New Zealand Doctor Rata Aotearoa. Each episode of System Fix, we take a look at progress with the reforms proposed by the Health and Disability System Review Panel, also known as the Simpson Report. I speak to regular panellists and invited guests about those changes, the highs, the lows, what's happened to date and what we might expect. So this episode is a little different from previous episodes because, well, it's me all by myself. Print production creates a few extra challenges over the Easter break, and it was wise to postpone my recent interview for the podcast. And then, due to the illness of a family member, I found myself having a more intimate involvement with the health system than I would have liked. And I also found myself at home for Easter. So I thought for our regular listeners, I would give a quick recap on what has happened since we last podcasted, and then delve into some archive audio discussion around the proposed shape of DHBs and the new Health NZ entity. The big news in the past few weeks was Health Minister Andrew Little's breakfast event at Parliament, streamed live on Facebook with a 7:30 a.m. start. Those of us who were up early and keen followers of the health reforms might have been expecting a significant announcement. We were disappointed. It seems the breakfast was more about getting people in the wider sector up to date with reform progress. Mr. Little confirmed that Cabinet would be making an announcement at the end of April on the structural changes to the sector, and that legislation to enable those changes would not be coming through until late in the year. That's a little bit of a delay on what we had previously expected. Mr. Little also reiterated his support for a more powerful Māori Health Authority than was recommended by the Simpson Report and wide engagement with Māori through the process. To quote Mr. Little directly, "At the core of our reform is a by Māori for Māori approach. Our role as the Crown is to be the enablers of change and not the barrier to it." End of quote. The shape and function of a Māori Health Authority and how it might relate to regional Māori providers and iwi is something we have discussed in previous episodes, so today I thought in advance of the late April announcement I would take a look back through some previous discussion on DHBs in Health NZ. Of course, I don't have any panellists with me here today, but I did have last year for our popcorn panel on Health NZ and supersized DHBs. Tim Tenbensel, health policy researcher at Auckland University and regular panellist on System Fix. Ian Powell, health sector commentator and former executive director of the Association of Salaried Medical Specialists. And Alan Moffat, medical director of ProCare. Alan has also worked previously for County's Manukau DHB. For those of you not familiar with popcorn panels, these are Zoom events born out of lockdown to provide a space for us to meet with experts and chat about the issues of the day. So I'm going to be a bit cheeky and borrow some of that audio because I think it is worth revisiting as we await the decisions on the new sector structures. When the review of the health sector was announced a couple of years back by then Health Minister David Clark, it's pretty safe to say that most of the sector was crying out for change. When I talked to Tim about his first impressions of the Simpson Report, he said if he had been handed in by one of his students, he would have sent it back and asked them to show their working, because it was not possible to join the dots between what they say is the problem with the sector and what they say are the solutions. During our popcorn panel, I asked Tim, should we have DHBs at all?
If you'd asked me that 10 years ago, I'd have said, yeah, well, you know, it's an interesting experiment and we should maybe stick with it a little while longer. But I think after 20 years, you know, if we look back at what the point was to have take a population-based approach to health services that encompassed both primary and secondary and community-based services and, you know, be able to take a strategic approach across all of those areas, well, it really hasn't happened in the way that anybody's intended. And I think 20 years is long enough to do that experiment, basically. So, you know, services beyond hospitals struggle to get any strategic airtime in DHBs and they end up fighting for the crumbs of the table. I mean, hospitals have got their own struggles, of course, as well. And the crumbs are just the small amounts of expenditure that the DHBs actually had some control over. The interim report laid out that problem quite well, I thought. So how we get from that to the idea of, well, we'll sort of just inch our way to 8 or 12 DHBs and have Health New Zealand with very unclear relationship between them is a bit beyond me, really. I mean, I can't see what the rationale for the number 8 to 12 is, but, you know, it's sort of a bit of a halfway middling sort of vision which doesn't really inspire anyone at this point.
Ouch. That sounds like a C-minus grade from Associate Professor Tim Ten-Bensel, but he was not totally dismissing the recommendations. I asked if the recommendations needed major change or could they be reworked a bit?
Yeah, I do, because I think, well, an opener for 10 is if you're going to have Health New Zealand, then don't bother with the DHB's local sort of purchasing commissioning function at all. I mean, you'd be better off doing that in an organisation like Health NZ with local offices. I think that would make much more sense. It would shift the dynamics enough, I think, to sort of create a lot of potentially positive dynamics, because there's a lot of good things happening locally in lots of parts of the country, and I think we could build on that, and that would do it.
I asked Alan whether primary care would be better off with supersized DHBs. He did not think so. He also explained how under the current model, ring fencing fails to secure funding.
But the reality is when you start heading into deficit, you know, the default position is to look after their provider, and they consider themselves a provider of default as well. And so they get the funding. So my view is that even if you ring-fenced funding for primary healthcare, as we had with mental health, it will not protect investment in the community in primary care. And I think that was very clearly demonstrated with the ring-fence and mental health. And it took a long time to get that money actually spent as well. There's a very deliberate trick that DHBs use to basically cross-subsidise the DHB provider from their community provider spend. And they just say in their DAP they intend to spend it, but they don't actually intend to spend it. And then they have a surplus in one area that offsets the deficit in the other area at the end of the year. And I think it's been well demonstrated, in fact, even in the report to some extent, that underinvestment has continued to occur for years. And I think you simply have to remove that function from the DHBs to make it work. So I totally support Tim's proposal that Health New Zealand should be a commissioning body, and that general practice would be much better off if there was direct funding, you know, from that body. But let's disregard the question of PHOs. The key issue for me is really that Health New Zealand needs to be the commissioning agency.
Ian was less concerned about the merger of the DHBs and structure of the system, and more about funding, leadership, and figuring out what we want the system to do.
I do disagree with some of what Tim and Alan have said, although I did like Tim's reference to little connection between what the problem is and what the solution is, an absence of dots, let alone lines. I look at it from the standpoint that the problem that we have in our system is not the structures per se. The structures themselves, when I look at it internationally, aren't actually too bad. Forget about the boundaries for the moment, but the concept is that primary and secondary, or community and hospital, the probably better way of putting it, are integrated as much as makes good clinical sense. Now, the problems that we've had with the system don't relate to the structures, but they relate to things like, funding certainly in terms of deficits, particularly since about 2009. That's been a serious problem. You start to get into short-term decision-making when you're under pressure. You start to make the wrong decisions, or at least you don't make the right ones. I think there's a difference between the two. We've got a problem with leadership capacity and capability. We've got a problem with a lack of engagement with the workforce, and even with the population-based formula, which I think is better than a demand-driven formula that the UK has had. The problem is that process has never been transparent, and from time to time has been put to one side, in part due to natural disasters, which it's not designed for. So my view is that you don't restructure before you work out what your processes ought to be, and you focus on your process improvement. The thing that interests me in the Simpson report is its focus on community and primary as the entry point, and also potential driver of systems improvement. But although it doesn't express it that way, its dispersed nature makes that very difficult, and it recognises that you've got to enhance capability and capacity. And I think that by having a process of restructuring going on, and uncertainty in most parts of the country about in 5 years' time what services are going to be provided, the public are going to be confused. The workforce is going to be confused. Extremely difficult to recruit to many places where they need to recruit if you don't know what your services are going to be like in 5 years' time. It's almost impossible. So put the potential tools for disruption to one side and focus on your process improvement, beginning perhaps with locality planning, because that's a huge task, but it potentially forms the basis. And maybe down the track, those process improvements may well lead to a better idea about how DHBs could be configured. Look, just a quick aside to, I think, Ellen's point about branch officers of Health Workforce New Zealand. I think that's what the mega DHBs will be, branch officers in effect. They'll just be called DHBs. And I don't think that degree of centralisation is desirable. There's a natural tension in all health systems between what is done locally and what is done nationally. It's a good tension, it's a healthy tension, but you can't actually structurally get there.
Meanwhile, Tim felt DHBs had been given the chance to show they could operate as intended and had not really made the grade.
You know, we've had two experiments really, pre-2009 and post-2009. We've seen two very different sets of conditions, one in austerity and one in relative clover. And I don't think the vision of the DHBs has worked in either of those conditions. Certainly wasn't going to work in the second, but I would argue it actually didn't really work that well in the first, in terms of that integrated capacity. However, having said that, if there is going to be an incremental approach based on the current system, I'd probably say that half the country's okay and half the country isn't. The half the country that's okay is generally south of Taupo and north of Wellsford. The bit in between needs serious structural attention, I would believe. Might be too glib, but yeah, something like that.
I had heard criticism of the Simpson report for not painting a picture of what the health system might look like in the end. Alan said he liked the model put forward by Helen Parker of Pinnacle and Martin Hefford of Tuara Compass, in which DHBs became hospital networks and primary care was commissioned by integrated care organisations. Both DHBs and integrated care organisations then reported back to Health New Zealand.
You know, I'd always thought that one of the good things about a DHB-led system was that having one common funder and provider across all of healthcare meant you should be able to have an integrated system. And I worked very hard on that with counties around integrated care for, you know, a decade. And it just got deprioritised as time went on, if I'm being honest. And I believe, you know, we've had 20 years of DHBs and some systems actually are working in a more integrated fashion. But by and large, you know, we haven't seen the benefits of that for patients in the system. It's still very fragmented. So I think we do need a different approach. And therefore, I think having an organisation that's responsible for both the horizontal integration, because there's huge issues around, you know, multidisciplinary care and getting a connected community system in place, as well as the vertical integration with hospitals and second tier. I believe that that would set you up actually in 10 years time for a system that functions in a much better way and serves the population in a much better way than what we currently have. I would echo that I think structure is not as important as being really clear about what the function is that you want. So I agree with Ian's point there that we need to be really clear about what we're trying to achieve. And in the same way, the report doesn't address, you know, it talks about a need for a culture change, because having worked in DHBs, I can tell you the culture is very different. But there's nothing in there that gives me confidence that we'll get that culture change and a focus of whole of system in a way that actually gives equal weight or even greater weight to the community primary sector.
A question came from audience member Auckland GP Tane Taylor. Were there any better outcomes for Auckland and Waitemata DHBs when Lester Levy acted as a joint chair, effectively creating a pseudo-supersized DHB? Ian took the question.
Short answer is I don't think so, because it was a top-down thing, sharing a board chair of two boards, albeit neighbouring of itself, is not the right reason for changing any sort of clinical relationships between the two DHBs. In fact, I would argue that the three DHBs at that time, albeit spluttering, were working more together, endeavouring to. And then suddenly there's a change made to that, and the two DHBs are sort of siphoned off a bit from the other one, and it made no practical sense. I mean, there was some collaboration, but that collaboration was happening anyway. Apart from looking perhaps good on a CV, I don't think it made a significant difference.
When Alan was at Counties Manukau, the DHB worked hard to establish a network of localities.
I think the concept has some sense, and I actually like the concept of a local network of health providers. I think there is some sense to that, because that's about function and integration. So I support that aspect of the report. The difficulty around localities, I think in Auckland we have a very artificial scenario with many PHOs with no geographical sense to them. And so, you know, that doesn't make sense. But in many areas, particularly provincial New Zealand, that's not a problem. Actually, you have a locality-based approach by definition. Some of the DHBs are merely localities, really. So I think it is important to have a local flexibility and local approaches that involve people in their healthcare in a way that they can meaningfully sort of influence service development. So that, to me, has some appeal. I would say that that whole infrastructure for counties cost an awful lot of money and delivered practically nothing. They had a really serious stab at it. I'd have to say probably resisted by and large by the PHOs, and perhaps that was part of the problem, but it really didn't deliver a hell of a lot of good, I'd have to say, if it cost a lot of money.
Then I found myself getting a bit tricky and resorting to the old funder-provider split terminology.
So at the moment, presumably with these recommendations, you know, Health NZ is going to be commissioning and funding, but the DHBs will still be funders and providers, and the localities will be providers. Tim, that sounds like a bit of a recipe for confusion.
It's an interesting language that sort of goes back to the 1990s, and the language that has taken hold, I think, in recent years, you know, loosely, is the language of commissioning. And there's a subtle difference, because commissioning is a more collaborative approach to working out what's needed collectively between whoever's funding and who's delivering. And sometimes the boundaries might be a little bit more blurry than it would be a funder-provider split. So I think there's, even in countries that have natural funder-provider splits like the Netherlands and, you know, sort of social insurance-based systems, they still move in that direction of a bit more collaboration anyway. If we call it a funder-provider split, it's not going to look like the HFA or the RHAs. And, you know, within many DHBs, they've kind of softened that boundary. You know, a number of DHBs don't even talk in terms of funder and provider arm anymore. Maybe there is de facto, but it's not fashionable in public management circles anyway to talk that way or to think that way. Or put it this way, if the funder doesn't know what it wants or how it's going to get it, what's the point? And that's pretty much what we've got. The deliver population health to deliver equity, the funder does not know how to do it.
Those are strong words from Tim, but pretty much nail it. I asked Ian whether the proposal for Health New Zealand was a return to the National Health Board days.
Well, I think it would be as grunty as what Murray Horn, who led that review that proposed the National Health Board, had in mind, but not with the way it unfolded. Because what was proposed was a National Health Board that would be separate from the Ministry of Health, and that it would have a lot of similarities with the Health Funding Authority that was disbanded previously, except that it would include provision as well as funding. And certainly at that time, when I was an ASMS at that time, we argued strongly against that in the sense of having two national bureaucracies. They both would require policy brains, and they would become competing with each other. And there were signs of that of the HFA and the ministry in that latter period of the late 1990s. So you had to go back to what is the function rather than what is the structure. And some of the functions that were proposed for the National Health Board were actually quite important, because I think that when, what comes through in the Simpson report, even more so in the interim report, our system does well, but it's not as nationally cohesive as it should be. That was a big bit that was missing. Unfortunately, I don't think the ministry actually recruited the capability it was necessary to make that happen. So I think this is going back to the Murray Horn National Health Board rather than the National Health Board that was actually put in place within the Ministry of Health. I think from recollection, it comprised about 50% of the ministry at the time.
I asked Tim if he had any clear idea of how the relationship between the Ministry of Health and Health NZ might look.
Not really. It would depend on the process of getting there, really. I mean, if you tried to start with a blank sheet of paper and say, this is what should go in the ministry, this is what should go in the Health NZ, I think that'll be a disaster. You know, it's probably going to be the same people that are already existing that are going to be filling those roles in those organisations. So it's almost like, here's a problem, here's a Rubik's Cube, how might you work this out collectively? And sort of, you know, I think that would need a little bit of time to happen a bit more organically if that's what we're going to head towards. There are probably some risks in doing that as well, but I just don't think what's suggested in the report about we need to clarify what the divisions are, I mean, that just doesn't work in health sectors anywhere. And it follows what everyone's been saying about structure and function. The blank piece of paper approach has got no merits.
Another question from the audience: would the cost of restructuring be recouped by increase in efficiencies?
Very rarely works out that way in practice, but it might depend on your time frame. It's generally just really hard to say. We haven't had good experience with it in New Zealand. It's a really hard question to answer, and usually not going to be the case in the first 2 to 5 years. And 20 years, you've got so many other confounding factors down the track, and everybody's forgotten about it anyway. So, you know, I think we should forget about that rationale, basically.
And Alan?
I have a very strong view about this. I mean, first of all, the cost of change is not small, just the monetary cost of a structural change. But on top of that, it's the stagnation that occurs for years while organisations get themselves organised and no decisions are made, and we take our focus off what we really should be achieving in terms of health outcomes. And that impact will be significant and will have a long tail. My experience, taking stuff into DHBs, large bureaucratic organisations, will cost more. I don't think there'll be a lot of savings than what they're suggesting.
And Ian, cost savings arising from efficiencies?
My short answer is no, and my longer answer is highly unlikely.
Helen Parker, Chief Executive of Pinnacle, put forward a question. She asked the three panellists what was missing from the report for them.
I'd really like to see how we could improve commissioning contracting to actually encourage integration. And to me, there's been a whole lot of missed opportunities. If I look at the pharmacy contract, for instance, if I look at maternity care, funding is a driver, and there are very strong professional silos. We do need to break those down. We have to, as somebody said in the chat, sort of go up power in order to actually improve things. I think we're in quite a different space to where we were, though, in the 90s. And so I'm a bit more optimistic that the system is ready for better integration for the sake of it. But we need to make sure that the drivers that we've got are used to quite purposefully encourage the integration, not actually add more fragmentation.
I would say that the report starts off by saying how good the system's worked and then goes on by saying how crappy it is. And I think it would have been better if they had said, let's focus on building on the strengths. Let's acknowledge, and they do state it quite clearly, that the system's not cohesive enough. I wish they'd looked at something like, for example, it was discussed in your first panel, the South Canterbury experience, where they actually cut out the PHO, and that was driven to a large extent by dissatisfaction with the DHB and dissatisfaction with GPs. And the PHO and the management company it used to act on its behalf in certain things became an obstacle. And they established a much more direct relationship. And in many respects, although not complete, it provides a bit of a foundation for the locality planning. And of course, the DHB that size as well is well placed for it. So I would have preferred that they'd built on some of the strengths to take it forward rather than sort of have this unusual thing of it's a good system, but it's crap. And it's a polarized assessment. I agree, we're actually very strong with what Alan said earlier about commissioning and the skill set needed for that. It is difficult, but you don't create a new organization in order to recruit that skill. I think at least as a transitional process, why doesn't the ministry look to recruit that capability? Because it's just as likely to go to an existing ministry as it would be to a new creation if it's there. Some of that skills may exist actually in some of the DHBs that have stronger community hospital relationships. And Canterbury is a case in point, but there are other DHBs as well.
I'd sort of echo that, Ian. I think let's get a sense of where things are working relatively well. And I think those might be two cases you'd look at, simply for the reason we don't know what effect that has on outcomes, particularly in Canterbury or South Canterbury. But we do know that they are doing new practices. They're actually trying new ways to work as a sector, which move away from some of the traditional transactional approaches. So I think we should sort of build on that energy, because one of the things I'm very frustrated in the report is it says we need more collaboration and we need more accountability. And of course, the whole story of the last 20 years has been the tension between collaboration and accountability. It's not even acknowledged that it's a tension. You might get a virtuous circle between them, and that might be what's going on in Canterbury. And, where more collaboration breeds accountability, which breeds more collaboration, that's the sort of dynamic that you want. But we really don't understand how that happens, where it starts, and how we can actually foster that in other parts of the country where it's not happened. That's what we need to do.
George Arnold painted an interesting picture.
It's an interesting observation from George Arnold. Commissioning seems to mean different things to different people. My understanding, it includes an element of co-design and partnership between funder and provider. This kind of collaboration requires major cultural change and a major change in capabilities. In the current context, collaboration appears to be an unnatural act between unconsenting adults.
And finally, I asked the panellists if they had any other observations they wanted to add.
Well, I was struck by the question about consenting before consenting parties and that. I'd say that pretty much I think that I'm not sure that we're consenting adults on this panel, but we're certainly, I think, consenting panellists. Although we're reflecting different perspectives, I think there's a lot of a high level of commonality, and particularly around the question of process improvement trumps structural change any day, every time.
And Tim?
Yeah, I think part of this is we've got to look beyond the health sector at examples of, you know, there's some things very specific about health, but we've got there are sort of other policy areas and where collaboration actually does work and does, you know, sort of produce good results, and we can learn from some of those things. And we've got to get away from some of the legacies of our public sector reforms of the 1980s and 90s.
Alan?
Yeah, well, look, first of all, I'd like to say that it is a very political process. We're kidding ourselves if we think otherwise. And so at the moment, we have a report. I understand it's probably had several iterations and has changed quite substantially from the earlier drafts, and that's a political process. But let's not waste this opportunity. As I said, the cost of change is there. We do need change, but let's get the most out of it, and let's give it good, considered debate and make sure that what we end up with is going to be something that does take us into the next decades of healthcare for the sake of our country. And I believe that the current report doesn't do that.
And that is pretty much where our popcorn panel ended. All three panellists predicted the Simpson report would not be implemented as it appeared, and that prediction has already been proven to be true, with the Minister's commitment to a Māori health authority with power to create change. I'm really looking forward to the announcement of the new sector structures at the end of April, so we can move away from speculation and retrospection towards looking at how new sector structures will meet the requirements of the Simpson report to improve health outcomes and achieve equity. I know it's been a little unusual having a panel discussion without a panel, but with a long weekend and nowhere to go, a little retrospection seemed like an okay idea. I hope you've enjoyed listening. Catch you again soon. Kia ora! Thanks for listening to System Fix, brought to you by the Health Media. If you are interested in learning more about changes to the health system, you can subscribe to New Zealand Doctor Rata Aotearoa by going to nzdoctor.co.nz, and you can subscribe to Pharmacy Today by going to pharmacytoday.co.nz. The Health Media also publishes a free fortnightly newsletter about people moving around the health system, the Roster Te Rārangi.